Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025 The Game. We are live today on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Our streaming presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello. How are we doing?
Good. We are live at First Horizon Park, where the Nashville Sounds begin the final homestand of the season against the Columbus Clippers. It's Fan Appreciation Weekend, so everybody get on out to the ballpark, as I have been many a time this year. It's the final weekend. I will be out here at least twice this weekend. You know, they're here against Columbus today, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, season. And I will be out here at least twice.
As you should.
Well, one of my buddies from college pitches for the other team.
Oh, good.
So I will be out here for all of that. Very, very excited.
Who are we rooting for?
Well, if he pitches, we're rooting for him.
Okay.
But it's a true funny story, like 4 or 5 years ago. You know, so we had the Sounds, and the Sounds are on 94.9, and we love the Sounds. Mm-hmm. But we had the Sounds for like the first couple of years I was here. Then we lost the Sounds, and the Sounds were on another radio station. And, you know, we were cool with it, but we didn't have the Sounds anymore. Mm-hmm. And so this must have been 4 years ago, like 2016 maybe. Same guy, same buddy of mine, was pitching at AAA for Reno, which is a AAA affiliate of the Diamondbacks. And I did not know that he had pitched the night before. So I got here, and Floyd and I do the show. I look at the scoreboard, it says, you know, winning pitcher, Matt Cook. I went to college with him.
I know Matt Cook.
I was like, I know him. So Cookie is in the bullpen for the Columbus Clippers, so I will be here today. I'll definitely be here today, but I'll be here throughout the weekend, you know, just kind of hanging out. We got a lot of football to get into this weekend, and we will. But one thing that we do on this show, at the start of every Preds training camp, which, can you believe today is the start of Preds training camp, is the opening of Preds training camp?
Well, it's kind of weird because I've been in this whole summer mindset. I woke up today and it was like 60 degrees. It's Preds training camp. It's just like, okay, now I'm getting into fall mode. We're transitioning out of summer. Football's in full gear.
So as we do on this program, and as we have done for the entirety of this program, we usually spend the first hour or so talking about the Predators as they open up training camp. And every year we start it with the same question. Ian, do you know what that question is without looking down at the grid, which I know that you have in front of you, but are you used to this question by now?
I think so.
Caroline, do you know what the question is?
I do, because I read the grid.
Okay. The question every year is the same. What are the expectations? And I went into last season and I said I had no expectations for the Predators. And I think some people got mad about that. Like, I think they got mad about, you know, I think a lot of people thought no expectations equaled that you think they're going to be bad, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not what I meant by no expectations last year. I wanted to see a lot of things about the team. Like, I wanted to see, could Johansson and Duchesne turn it around? The answer to that was no. So I don't really need to see that this year. Even though it's going to be a storyline, I'm sure they'll talk about it when they first talk to the media. I'm sure Hines will talk about that. I'm sure Poyle will talk about that. And they'll say, you know, no, we're thinking this will be a good do-over year for Joey, and we think it'll be a good do-over year for Matt, and we're really excited. That was last year to me. The young players. I wanted to see the young players last year. Now, they didn't play the young players as much as I would have liked. But so that this year I care about. But as far as playoff talk, they made the playoffs last year, and yet I have a hard time believing that they're a better team today than they were when they wrapped up that series with Carolina. And I just kind of, I look at, you know, when I think of what are the expectations for the season, I don't want to say that I have the exact same expectations I had for last year, but I think I kind of do. And the more I talk about this, the more I feel like last season probably was a lost year for what I think they needed to accomplish. Because I'll ask you this. Last year I said, look, I just want to see the young players play. I want to know who can play, who can't. I want to know which guys of this core belong, which ones need to go. Maybe they made a little progress there with Arvidsson and Ryan Ellis out of here. Now they got some more young guys that are going to have to play. I kept saying, okay, I want to see the coach, because Hines didn't get a fair shake of it that first year. He comes in the middle of the season. He's coaching for a month. COVID shuts everything down. He gets a 2-week training camp and then goes right to the Arizona bubble, or to the, you know, the bubble where they play Arizona, and they lose. And so I was like, all right, let's give Hines a fair shake at it. I thought Hines coached pretty well last season. I thought he stunk it up in the playoffs as far as coaching's concerned. So I still kind of a little torn on Hines. You all know how I feel about Poyle. That hasn't changed. But I still feel kind of the same way I felt last year, which was I don't have any expectation of talking about this team like they're going to go compete for a Stanley Cup. And I don't have any expectation of, you know me, if they make it to the first round of the playoffs, that's great. It's exciting because playoff hockey is fun. It's good for us on the radio because, one, we're the flagship station of the team. And so that's good. But as far as, like, if they make it to the first round this year and lose to, I don't know, Colorado, will we really learn anything about the team? That's all I care about this year. Is Tolvanen a core piece going forward? Is Fabro a core piece going forward? Is Tomasino a core piece going forward? Is Cody Glass a core piece going forward? Is John Hines worthy to coach? I believe this is the last year of his contract. Is John Hines worthy of being the coach of this team? So a lot of the things I felt last year kind of feel right now. And those are my expectations. I'm guessing their expectations are probably a little different.
Well, I think there's a difference between what are your expectations and what has this Predators team made you think your expectations should be. Because David Boyle said, we're going for a competitive rebuild. And now, we don't really know exactly what that means.
Sure.
It sounds just kind of like buzzwords. But to me, a competitive rebuild means we are going to continue to add new pieces to this team while still trying to compete for the playoffs, compete for a Stanley Cup. That's what that sounds like to me. We're going to redo our core, but we still want to be a competitive team in this league. Now, that feels like that's what David Poyle wants people to expect. That's him personally, his expectation for this team. But for me, I think I'm kind of with you in that I hate using the term rebuilding here, but if the Predators do want to go through with this youth movement, if they do want to continue to rely on these younger guys and eventually transform them into the core of this team where, like you said, Tomasino, Dante Fabro, Ellie Tolvanen, Luke Cunnan, the younger guys on this team, if they want them to flourish into eventually a Stanley Cup team, I need to see how those young guys do that this year. So me personally, my expectations going into the 2021 season is, can the younger guys do it? Can they dominate on the ice? Can they play an integral role on this team? Because Stanley Cup feels lofty. First round of the playoffs, I mean, the Predators did it this past season, and it looked pretty darn bad the first half of the season. So crazier things have happened. But I'm not going to look at the playoffs or Stanley Cup right now. I think my biggest focal point going into the season is the young guys.
So I don't even judge Poyle off of the playoff result last year. You know, like I don't judge Poyle and say, well, you know, last year they had a team that they thought could compete, and then they made the first round of the playoffs. So, yay, way to go. I don't look at it like that. I don't understand the path they're trying to go. Competitive rebuild kind of sounds like when you're going to break up with somebody.
Uh-huh.
So instead you take a break, and it's like, okay, what's this, what's that? And then all of a sudden they get a Hinge profile or something. Like, that to me is like what competitive rebuild is.
It's contradictory.
Right. It's
you're
like,
either competitive or you're rebuilding.
Right. But they won't say it.
Right.
But see, I think for me, I would feel better if Poyle would just come out and say, we're rebuilding. Like if Poyle were to come out and say, hey, we are rebuilding this year. Look, we tried. I know fans, and I don't know if he cares what fans think or not. I have no idea if he does. And I'm not going to be one of these people that makes the assumption that he doesn't, because I don't know that. Mm-hmm. And I do know that, you know, people sometimes get driven by what they hear. And I don't know if he looks at it like, well, the fans had fun at the end of the season last year, and I'm glad we made the playoffs, so let's do that again because that's what the fans want. Because
well,
that's not what I want.
How long can you do that? How long can you make the playoffs in the first round and get knocked out in six games? How many seasons can you do that? Because I don't want to make an assumption, but if someone asked me, hey, would you rather make it the first round of the playoffs, get bounced every year, or would you rather suck for 3 or 4 years and then compete for a Stanley Cup and be a serious competitor? I have to say that I would probably choose the latter. And
sure.
I think a lot of other Predators fans would do that as well.
Sure. Now, if you own the team, how would you feel?
See, that's different because if I'm a fan, my income doesn't change whether the Predators are good or not. You know, my job isn't on the line whether the team is good or not. So I can understand why David Poyle could maybe play it the way of, okay, look, we're rebuilding. We're going to focus on these younger guys, but we're still going to be competitive.
Please
we
buy tickets.
We're still going to look at the playoffs. We still want to win games. That's still the forefront of our minds is the playoffs, is winning a championship. But we're going to do it with a lot of these younger guys. That doesn't really make sense to me.
So I want to see the young guys play.
I do too.
Like, I want to see the, I don't want
to
see,
we wanted to see him play schlub in the playoffs last year.
Yes. I don't want to see some schlub come in here that can't play. Like, that's kind of why I don't really like the whole, you know, Felipe Myers thing.
Philip, I think it's
Myers,
just Philip.
Whatever. That's why I don't like that. Because he's not a young guy. He's not any good.
But that's the competitive aspect. Is, okay, we're rebuilding because we have some of the younger guys, but we're still going to be competitive, so we're going to pick up a seasoned vet.
Here's what I need the Predators to do for me. And I mean this with just total sincerity. I almost need one result. Like, I think I've learned that they can't live in a gray area. Like, they can't analyze the gray area accurately. So I either need them to be really good this year and those young guys to be the next wave of superstars and then be red hot. And I hope the Predators, when I say what I need out of them, I hope that I don't need this. I hope that they don't make me want this team to be bad from the standpoint that then it will force them to actually change the path they're trying to go. I need there to be a decisive path after this season, or even in the middle of this season, in which we know, okay, this is where they're going. Ian points out that Philip Myers is 24. He's 24, but hasn't he been in the league for like 4 or 5 years? I don't know.
A couple years. Ooh. He's been a couple. Oh, sorry. Did I come in a little hot?
Oh, that's okay. That's what I just wasn't expecting, Ian.
Yeah, just he's been in a couple years. So
Whatever. Yeah.
Three.
I mean, but I guess I'm basing it off of when they traded for him and everybody, you know, the Pierre Lebruns of the world were like, yeah. And once I hear that, then it's like, okay, fine. Now he's got to prove that he's not one of those kind of players. Like, it's kind of like the Titans telling me that Jeff Swaim's a starting tight end. Like, I know he's not.
But so, he can prove it to me.
Yeah, and he's got the opportunity, and he has proven that he is not the father.
Well, there you go.
And that's that's how I feel about a lot. So, look, here's how I feel with the Predators. Here's my expectation this year. Either prove to me you're on the right path, or prove to me that you got to start making monumental changes. Not the half in, half out. Because getting rid of Ryan Ellis and Victor Arvidsson is half going for a rebuild, but not turning around and trading Philip Forsberg or Mattias Ekholm without a contract, that's going full-on rebuild. Mm-hmm. And they're not doing that. So this season, I need to know, okay, we're either going all in with this group and that these young guys can pick it up and in 2 or 3 years, you're back in competing for the cup, or it's time to really just tear it down and you got Josi and Saros and let it rip. And I just think they don't like to do that. And that, I guess, gets me going. So that's how we're starting the show today. Again, it's our Preds preseason or our Preds training camp preview show. We do it every year. 615-737-1025. Chris Sanders will join us at 245, get his thoughts on the Titans and the Colts as we'll transition to that at 245. 615-737-1025. I got the one big question as they enter training camp that a non-definitive answer in the immediate future is not going to be acceptable. We'll get to that coming up next. We are live today out here at First Horizon Park. Again, the sounds, it is fans. It is Fan Appreciation Weekend. Come on by. They got great specials all weekend long. Tickets available. I think it's great, you know, Friday night. You know, I don't want to go to high school. It kind of sounds. Sounds Thursday night. Sounds this weekend against the Columbus Clippers, where we'll be rooting for the Sounds, except for when Matt Cook pitches. When Matt Cook pitches, we'll be rooting for Matt Cook.
This is a pro Matt Cook show.
Do you think the Sounds, who are our partners, are okay with me saying that?
They like you. I think they'll throw you a bone on that one.
I will let Ryan deal with any issues the Sounds may raise about me saying, hey, you know, root for the Sounds, except when Matt Cook is pitching, then we got to root for Matt Cook.
Poor Ryan, always picking up your mess.
Always, every time. 615-737-1025, Stillman & Company. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. CSP at 1025 The Game.
What do you want to take away from the second half of last season and into the playoffs for this group that you want to apply as you start a new season?
I think when you look at what happened the second half of the year was we really committed to an identity that really suits our team and suits the personnel. And I think it's a situation where, you know, when you look at the consistency that we played with, the intensity and the competitiveness that we played with throughout the lineup was something that really made a big difference. And I thought early in the year, you know, it was inconsistent in those areas. Now we believe we have some really good talented players on the team, but I think the thing that the group really recognized and committed to was, you know, there has to be a certain level of work ethic and competitiveness night in and night out, shift in and shift out, that allow you to be able to set up your game to create offense, to be a hard team to play against, to put yourself in positions to win more often than not. And that was something that we really got to as a group the second half of the season and into the playoffs. And then now we want to be able to come back into training camp. I think there's a clear understanding how we need to play. And now it's our job to make sure that we're using training camp to get our habits back, get the identity back, the fitness level back, how hard we want to be able to play, get those things established early in training camp, and then you continue to build from there. And obviously it was a good second half of the season. You know, we didn't win a round of the playoffs, so our objective is to build upon the identity we had at the end of last season, but we need to continue to grow it also. It can't just stay there. We've got to continue to grow it.
So that was a really long-winded way of John Hines on Preds Insider saying that last year we learned how to play hard. And this year we got to play hard.
Yeah. Yes, you do, John.
I got to say
you
this.
You do.
I got to say this. This is our Preds preseason preview show. Today they start training camp.
Mm-hmm.
You got to leave the Little League stuff at home. Like the you know, hey, we found our identity and we've got to play a certain way every night. And we have to bring it every night. And we have to play every night.
I mean, do you disagree with that?
But that's like a Little League thing, right?
Well, then what is a Major League thing?
The expectations that your players play hard every game. And that if your players don't play hard, then there are consequences.
I think that's what they're saying is you go out there and you play hard every game.
Right, but the other teams play hard too.
Yes.
So should they just not?
Should they just not play hard then?
Like if we were fighting a war with another country,
mm-hmm.
would the whole mission be, you know what we need? We just need to make sure that we are trying to shoot the other guy. Or would
yes.
we want like a plan that's like, no, what we need to do is we need to put our troops over here and we need to be allies with them and we need to, because if it's just, hey, we're just going to go in there and just start shooting at the other people. Guess what the other people are going to do too?
Shoot.
Okay.
Well, you also have to think that John Hines probably does have a very specific game plan, but maybe isn't going to share it on Prez Insiders.
Oh, I think he's totally sharing it. I think it is that whole thing of basically, I want my guys to go down there and forecheck every single night. Like, that's, I mean, I'm not trying to sound like too over the top here, mm-hmm. but I'll use an example. Like, when Bruce Arians took over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and mm-hmm. Jameis was the quarterback, and people were talking about, you know, Jameis turns the ball over a lot, and Bruce was like, and we're going to throw it down the field even more. Like, that is Bruce Arians in a nutshell, right? Like, Brady's not reckless with the football.
It's just throw the ball downfield and let's hope there's someone there to catch it.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Exactly.
That is what Bruce Arians
Joe looking. Milton's philosophy.
What Hines wants to do is he wants to forecheck you to death. That he wants his guys, all four lines, to hop over the board, and he wants you down in on their end, and he wants you to, you know, turn the puck over and set up opportunities in front of the net.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he wants to play. He wants to play the entire length of the ice, basically, you know, things that older guys that are offensive skill guys don't really like to do. That's kind of why you get the vibe he and Matt Duchene don't love each other.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the game he wants to play. But the stuff about, you know, the whole just, oh, yeah, you know, we got to play to this identity every night. These are big boys. You know, they heard that last year. You got to tell them something new. They've heard that last year. One other thing I have, and then we'll get to your phones.
Yes.
Philip Forsberg's not signed. Matthias Ekholm is not signed. I blew up Robbie Stanley earlier today when somebody texted in and said, I think that Forsberg should go out there and earn it this year before we give him the big contract. And I said, okay.
That sounds really nice.
Let's file this under that's not how things work. Like, if we could for a second. So, to me, and I don't know what their long-term plans are and when they plan to be good and what they plan to do in order to... You have to make a decision on these guys one way or another. My guess is, I texted Ryan this morning and I said, why are Forsberg and Ekholm not re-signed? And he said, well, a lot of people have a lot of different theories on that. So here's my theory. Mm-hmm. I think they want too much money, and I think they want no trade protections, which is what I would want if I were them too. And so if you want too much money and you want no trade protections, and there are teams that are giving out contract extensions and high dollars like candy, so the market is there for both guys. So either you're going to have to give them the money, you're going to have to give them the no trade protections, you're going to have to do something. So, okay, if you don't think that they'll take what you're going to offer, then you have to trade them. At the end of the day, that's where you are. You can't wait and then say, okay, well, you know, we thought Forsberg might cave, and instead of wanting $9.5 million a year, he still wants $9.5 million a year, and he still wants a no-trade protection, and we're not going to offer it. If he wants that now, and you don't think they're going to budge, then you got to start shopping him.
And if he wants that now and has an incredible season,
he can want 10.
He's going to want more.
Sure. And because those guys are looking at it like, you know, Mikhail Granlund 2 years in a row has hit the market. And it has not been there for him. And somehow the Predators keep bringing him back. And so it's like, hey, you know, whatever Nashville's offering me now, Nashville will offer me at the end of the year. I don't have to take it today. So I look at it like, you got to decide, okay, this is what we're willing to offer. And if not, we got to trade you. And maybe you wait till the deadline to do this when people get stupid. I don't know. But I do think that they got to decide. There's got to be a plan there with these two guys. You cannot. Because somebody said to me, well, you know, Josi went into the season a couple years ago before he signed his contract, and they signed it in November. Well, Roman Josi was your captain who you were literally going to bend over backwards for. You gave him a no-movement clause that you were not willing to give anybody else ever. And so now these guys are not Roman Josi, so it's not the same playbook. To me, they're either signed or you got to know how far away you are. And you got to know, okay, look, Forsberg wants 8.5 a year for 6 years, or he wants 8 years at eight, you know, that $64 million contract. And honestly, he probably wants more than that. And he wants a no movement clause. Are you willing to do that eventually? Would you cave and give him that eventually? If the answer is yes, then, okay, you can wait it out a little bit. If the answer is no, then you got to start looking to trade him. And then I think if they don't want to go, when you start discussing trading them, then maybe they will cave a little bit and say, well, okay, fine. I
want to stay here. Yeah.
You know, how about 6 years instead of eight? How about, you know, okay. That's the way I would approach it.
But do you think the Preds aren't willing to bend over backwards for Philip Forsberg?
I wouldn't be. The problem is they've been over backwards for too many people. They've just been over backwards. That's all they do, is they've just been over backwards for Ryan Johansson because they traded Seth Jones for him and they couldn't let him go, so they had to overpay him. And they've been over backwards for Matt Duchene, and they hate that contract right now. I mean, that one
Yeah, they're stuck with two bad contracts right now. So
I'll be honest with you. They're stuck with more than two bad contracts. They're stuck with those two. They're still paying the buyout on Kyle Turris.
Yeah, that's
they're
a bad
stuck
one.
With, I think this Granlund contract is way too long, but, you know, God forbid they look. Nobody else in the league over the last 2 years, other than the trade deadline when there were teams reportedly that wanted Granlund, nobody has made a jump at Granlund. And I think, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, he was going to hit the market. Like, we saw tweets the day of free agency that said, Granlund's agent says he's going to the market.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Predators bent over backwards. And
almost made it sound like, I think Adam Vingan had a couple of reports that made it sound like negotiations with Nashville were not going very well at all.
Yeah. And then somehow, miraculously, 4 years, what was it, 4 years, $20 million?
Yep.
Just boom. That's not good negotiating. Like, that's puts you in a tough spot. So I just don't know what their plan is here. I don't know what the Predators' plan is. That, I think, is what gives me the most anxiety about discussing the team and what they're doing, and because I don't know the plan. I can't see the plan. And I couldn't see the plan last year at the trade deadline, and I couldn't see the plan when they let Cale Yarncroke get exposed to Seattle, and I don't see the plan. And I think that's what gets me all worked up. And then when it comes to the Forsberg and Ekholm stuff, you're in a bind. Because if they get hurt, knock on wood, trade value's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anybody who acquires Ekholm is acquiring him to be a rental for your playoff run for this year. And if he gets banged up, no value. Forsberg, no value. And you can't lose those guys for nothing. I'm okay with signing them back, and it's not going to be easy to sign them back, and I'm okay with it if that's the route you want to go. But this is truly, I'd re-sign Ekholm and I'd ship out Forsberg.
Really? Yeah. Too expensive?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ekholm will hold up longer over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Forsberg is too streaky for me. Now, you get rid of a Philip Forsberg. How are you going to replace a Philip Forsberg is probably an interesting question in and of itself, but I think you'll get a lot in return for Philip Forsberg, and it's $9 million in salary that you'll save going forward, and you hope that one of these young first-round picks, Tomasino or Tolvanen, ultimately becomes a first-line winger.
Well, then,
so that would be the move that I would
then
make.
That sounds like, to me, a rebuild. That's not a competitive rebuild anymore. That's like you're completely breaking up the core of that team. And you're putting a lot of faith into hope. Hope that Philip Tomasino ends up being that guy that you think that he can be. Hope that Dante Fabbro, Ellie Tolvanen end up being these guys that you want them to be. That's a lot of hope. And that's a rebuild, which is fine. But they said they want a competitive rebuild. So I don't see the Predators getting rid of Philip Forsberg quite yet.
All right, we'll go right to your phones next. 615-737-1025. It's our Preds training camp preview. Again, training camp starts today. So if you've got a Preds thought, get that in. 615-737-1025. Chris Sanders at 245. Let me tell you about my friends at Edmunds. I love Edmunds. Buying a car can be overwhelming, especially now that demand is back and in full swing. Lucky for you, Edmunds has been taking the stress out of car shopping for over 50 years. Edmunds editors drive over 500,000 miles every year, testing thousands of hours on hundreds of new vehicles. They review almost every car on the market and rank the best ones in each category so you can narrow your search and compare options side by side to find the best vehicle for you. When you're ready, Edmunds makes it easy to find options in your area with accurate price estimates. They have helpful filters that if you don't want an SUV, you don't have to find an SUV. But if you want a pickup truck, you just put that right there in the filter. They have helpful filters so you can search by color, model, special features, engine type, drivetrain, price, distance, and more. They even show you dealerships that are offering home delivery. Edmunds is here to help guide you to your perfect vehicle. Visit Edmunds.com to see their best car rankings and search for vehicles near you. That's Edmunds.com. For cars, there's Edmunds. Stillman & Company live at First Horizon Park. Game tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on the Columbus Clippers, 7 o'clock. Great tickets available, and they're available all weekend long for Fan Appreciation Weekend. ESPN 94.9, by the way, is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in tonight as Nashville SC takes on Miami. Pre-game 6:15, and the match begins at 6:30. It is Preds training camp. What would you call this? The opening of Preds training camp?
Yeah, the preview, the
today,
the kickoff party.
The Stillman & Company, formerly Jared and the GM, official Predators preseason preview show. And now it's time for your calls. 615-737-1025. Craig, our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Craig, can you get started on Philip Forsberg and Matthias Ekholm? Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. Like you said before the break, you got to keep Ekholm and you got to get rid of Forsberg. I know he's a fan favorite, but you got to get out of the business of paying fan favorites because, as you've said for years, we need a big boy forward, and big boy forwards score more than 40 goals a year.
Yep, and I appreciate your call, Craig. Here's the thing. If you lose a Philip Forsberg, you're not getting a Philip Forsberg back. You might end up getting somebody better than Philip Forsberg in this deal, but I've seen oftentimes where teams trade high-end forwards and they don't get much in return. I've also seen, especially here, where you trade a guy who's probably on his last legs and you get a Philip Forsberg in return,
mm-hmm.
which is what happened with how they got Philip Forsberg. I just think that the Predators have tried the same things over and over and over again, and they're not working. So you can win with Forsberg on your team, but I don't think that he's going to be the reason why you win. And he's just too streaky. He's like one of these players on the Titans that is a good player, but he's not Derrick Henry.
That is reliable.
Right. And when you're paying all the money, you need Derrick Henry. You need the guy that you know is the ace in the hole, and they don't have that. And I get worried that Josi really isn't that as a defenseman, that he can't be that kind of high-end player in the playoffs because he doesn't really score goals in the playoffs. So I am in agreement with the caller that when you take these second level players that are not first level players and you pay them like they're first level players because they're your first level players.
Well, Roman Josi was the best defenseman in the league a couple years ago.
Roman Josi,
that far removed from it.
Roman Yossi's good. And what you're paying him is, like, he's worth the money you're paying. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a bad contract. At least it's not a bad contract yet. But that, you're right. But I'm thinking more like, when you think high-end players in the NHL, the Predators, Yossi's like the only one that maybe is real. But he's not like Drew Doughty, and he's not Victor Hedman, and he's not. And when we're talking about trying to build a cup team, those, you got to get one of those guys. You know, St. Louis, for example, had it in Vladimir Tarasenko. Mm-hmm. You got to get that kind of guy. And what you can't do is pay B-level players like they're A-level players, and that's what you've done with Johansson and Duchesne and what you did with Ryan Ellis and what, you know, and you just, I just don't think they should put themselves in that situation going forward. What do we have in the text line?
Shane from Ashland City texts in and says, I side with a rebuild, but if you're contending in one or two rounds consistently for 3 years, or you rebuild and suck for 3 years, would that paint a picture? Like, let's say, for example, McDavid hits free agency and chooses to leave. Do we have a better chance to get Connor McDavid if we are competitive or if we are rebuilding?
You have a better chance to get Connor McDavid if you're rebuilding, because the only way you get a Connor McDavid is if you are bad enough to draft a Connor McDavid.
And if you can pay an actual Connor McDavid the money.
Well, even if you could pay an actual Connor McDavid the money, Connor McDavid's not coming here. Like, he's, I mean, there's...
So to the texter's point, competitive.
Think about the very best players in the league. Mm-hmm. Like the high-end cup-winning goal scorers. They're all drafted by their club. Ovechkin was drafted by his club. Mm-hmm. And that contract that he just signed is probably going to end up being a bad contract right now. But he's won him a cup, and for a decade he's been a great player. Mm-hmm. But Ovechkin, drafted by his team.
Sidney Crosby.
Crosby, drafted by his team. McDavid, drafted by his team. You know, Bergeron, drafted by his team. Pasternak, drafted by his team. McKinnon, drafted by his team. Like, those good dudes, they don't leave. Because you don't let them leave. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, Austin Matthews, drafted by his team. So if you want that kind of player, like, I'm not holding out hope for, hey, let's build up a good team so Austin Matthews will want to come here. Because that's not how that works. Mm-hmm. What's next?
Another texture texts in and says, Tomasino on the first line. He hasn't even played in the NHL yet. Get real. Keep Ekholm over Philip Forsberg. Yeah, perfect. A team that lacks scoring needs to get rid of our best goal scorer.
But that's because I'm not dedicated to winning this year.
I think that's kind of what you have to go into this season is, are you dedicated to winning a cup? Are you dedicated to make it far in the playoffs? Or are you dedicated to invest in your team? And I think that's why the competitive rebuild statement from David Poile is incredibly confusing, because it doesn't identify which one you're doing. You can't do both.
Take the money out of this, right?
Okay.
Like, so forget about the owners wanting to fill the building and everything else. If they said to you, hey, look, we had a run. It was nice. We're tearing it down, mm-hmm. and now we're going in a different direction, and it's going to be a couple of years now. Like, we don't expect to win a lot this year, and if we do win some this year, like, good, but just know this is going to take some time.
Pay our dues now, so later on, hopefully,
would you have a problem with that in the middle of December when they are not good? Or would you say, hey, this is the plan, and I understand this is what the plan is?
I think I have to say, like, I understand that this is the plan, because I think that makes everyone on the same page going into the season. Because if you say it in December, I think whenever you're creating these expectations, December, it's a little too late, mm-hmm. because you already have players who are disgruntled, fans who are disgruntled with the club, because you said that we were going to be competitive. I say go into the season with these expectations. If we surprise ourselves, then great. And if we make a run, then great. But we are going in with these expectations because this is how we see the timeline for our club working out.
Michael Jordan one time.
Ah, yes. I was waiting to see how long it would take for a Michael Jordan reference, and it's taken 42 minutes, and that's got to be a new record.
Michael Jordan broke his foot.
Okay.
And he thought they didn't want him to play because they were worried that if he injures the foot more, then his career could be over, and the Bulls were afraid of, you know, hey, Krause and Reinsdorf were like, look, if we lose Michael Jordan, you know, we've lost Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. And so Jordan got mad because he thought they were doing it because they wanted to tank to get in the draft lottery. And so Jordan was against that. Like, I'm not worried about next year. I'm not worried about that. In 1987, The Bulls made a trade to go high up into the first round. They drafted Scottie Pippen. They had their own first round pick. They drafted Horace Grant. I think that that worked out pretty well for them.
Yep.
So that my point here is like, look, at some point, like this is what it's going to take. And this is where they are. Titans and Colts. Carson Wentz, we got news on whether or not he practiced what he did. We'll get to that next. Chris Sanders will join us, former Titans receiver. What did he think about the Seattle win? What does he think about Derrick Henry? What is his message for A.J. Brown's drops? What did he think of Julio? What's he think of the Colts game? Chris Sanders joins us coming up next. Invigorate Health, InvigorateHealthTN.com. Look, I know a lot of people are feeling old out there. Trust me. I'll be 32 years old this week, and I do not feel like I'm 24 or 25 anymore. And that's why if you're in your 40s or your 50s or even your 60s, you need to call my friends at Invigorate Health. They can get you feeling the way you used to. It's easy. They've got trained doctors and nurses that you come in for a consultation, and they'll find out exactly what you're lacking. Maybe it's a vitamin deficiency that they can take care of with an IV therapy. That's pretty simple. Just hook that IV right in there, and you will feel better. Maybe it's testosterone or hormone replacement that you need to increase your vitality because your testosterone drops every year once you start to get a little bit older. Maybe it's weight loss that you need help with. They do it all. Maybe it's the uncomfortable belly fat that you just can't get rid of. The M-Sculpt Neo, a non-invasive machine that they have that gets rid of 30% of the belly fat, 93% of the cellulite, and adds 25% muscle. That's right. You need to talk to my friends, Invigorate Health, InvigorateHealthTN.com. Give them a buzz today. Check them out online. Just make a consultation. You feel a little old, want to feel younger, feel more vital. Just do things that you're used to doing. Feel the way you're used to feeling. Invigorate Health, InvigorateHealthTN.com. Stillman & Company, Indianapolis Colts this weekend. That's right, divisional showdown. Titans standing at 1-1, Colts at 0-2. Carson Wentz did not practice today. He left the facility on Monday night with on a scooter, you know, with his foot in a boot on a scooter. Today, no boot, but did not practice. Frank Reich said they will evaluate it throughout the week, and we will, of course, consistently be evaluating it in that regard. Chris Sanders joins us now, former Titans receiver. So, Chris, let's start on this.
Sure.
1-1, when you left the pregame show on Sunday, I did not know how this team was going to compete against Seattle. Yeah. I did not know if they had a prayer. Chris, I couldn't believe it, what happened on Sunday with the Titans. What did you make of it?
Man, it just shows you this was this team is made of. I mean, when they're always backed in the corner, when everybody says they can't do it, and everybody's pushing them away and say they can't overcome the situation or adversity, they always do it. I just kind of figured in the back of my mind that the Tennessee Titans were going to win because they had so many things about them, and everybody was saying the same language. We got to go out there and play. We got to do our jobs. And they were focusing. When they went down there, I know they started off slow, and they were down 24-9. But they came back and they had resilience and came back and won the game. So I'm very, very proud of these guys because if you didn't have character guys on your team and you're down 24-9, a lot of guys would have quit. But with this makeup of this team, they're just a team that's resilient and never, never quit.
Chris, what do you make of Derrick Henry? And Woo! What I mean by that is you played with Eddie George. I know you and I have argued over the years about who at their peak is better. But I'm not sure I've ever seen a running back that can take over the game like Derrick. And not just take over the game. But, I mean, you're down 30-16. Most teams at that point say, well, we can't run the ball anymore today. True. And Derrick Henry literally ran them back into the game on Sunday. Yep. What'd you think of that?
You know, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. Number one, he's become a patient runner. And if you look at the first half, I think he had like 45 to 48 yards, and then all of a sudden he ends up with 182. He's patient. He didn't get upset. He just stayed with the program. And number two, I think he's a definite leader on that team. And we always talk about what makes a great leader. A great leader is making everybody around you better. And then number three, man, his vision. Man, his vision has become impeccable. Look at the 9-yard run. Look at the 60-yard run. And it just shows you that he's improving every part of his game. And I was listening to the show the other day when you were talking about, can Derrick Henry take this team to the Super Bowl? And I agree with you 100%. And the reason why I say 100% that he can do it, I'm not saying by himself, but what he does when he makes those long runs, when he puts the game on his shoulders, look how
it makes everybody around him better. Look at the defense. The defense started off slow, had no energy, but when he made that 9-yard touchdown and that 60-yard run, it energized the defense. It energized the special teams, and it uplifted everybody to play beyond what they're capable of doing. So, yeah, I'm telling you, man, he is one of the best running backs that I've ever seen.
It's funny you say that. I was on a radio show in Louisville today, and we were talking about Derrick Henry, and I say, yeah, well, we're talking about whether or not Derrick Henry could make it to the Hall of Fame. And those hosts, I was surprised by this. They were like, oh, yeah, Derrick Henry definitely make it to the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's definitely – when you look at the stats, Chris, everything that he does, it's in the same ballpark with Jim Brown and with Ladainian Tomlinson and O.J. Simpson and Barry Sanders. And I mean, are we truly appreciating Derrick Henry for what he's doing right now?
Man, I appreciate it. I mean, just look at what he did against the Seattle Seahawks. He literally took the game over by himself. I mean, basically by himself. I know Tannehill threw some great passes to Julio Jones, but when you're down 24-9 and you're running the ball instead of passing the ball that many times, it just shows you who's your impact player. And that guy right there is something special. And just watching him, look at his eyes, look at his body language. Even though they were down 24-9 and they were down by two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, I watched his body language. His body language was like, hey, I understand we're down, but I put in the work. I prepared. So I'm going to get my team back in this situation. That's why this cat is special now.
Colts are 0-2. They come in this weekend, Chris. And Carson Wentz has two sprained ankles, one low ankle sprain, one bad high ankle sprain. Jacob Eason, their backup, did not have a good training camp, did not have a good preseason, threw one meaningful pass on Sunday against the Rams, and it was intercepted by Jalen Ramsey. What do you make of the task ahead of them with Indianapolis? You said scares you. Why?
The reason why it scares me is because they're kind of in the situation that the Tennessee Titans were in last week. I'm not talking about the quarterback situation. I'm talking about overall. Everybody's saying their offense stinks. Everybody's saying that they can't do it. Everybody's saying that they don't have the mojo like they had, you know, a couple of years ago. Their back is against the corner, and that's the same thing with the Tennessee Titans. Everybody said they couldn't do it. They couldn't overcome adversity. So this is a team that's 0-2, and also this is a divisional game, so they're going to have to come out and play to figure out and get a win. I don't know if Wentz is going to play. I don't know if Easton is going to play. But I think they're not going to put it in the quarterback's hands. They're going to put it in Taylor's hands. So, you know, I just think that, you know, everybody's thinking that, okay, the Tennessee Titans are going to blow them out. Pump your brakes now, because you got to remember, this is a team that has their backs against the wall, and it's a dog that's backed up in the corner, and the only thing they can do is step out and bite. So it's going to be a good game. I think the Tennessee Titans are definitely going to win, but I just think it's going to be a closer game than what people think.
If you were playing, so to go back to your Titans, the Steve McNair, Eddie George, that group, would you be worried? Let's say Eason starts. Would you be worried about this Colts game?
It's not that I would be worried. I just got to make sure that I focus in practice. I know that's a lot of coach talk and what I'm saying, but you got to focus and go out there and do your job. And that's kind of what everybody's saying, you know, on the Tennessee Titans, from the front office to the head coaches to the players. Everybody's just saying, do your job and figure out a way to win, and we can win. I don't think they're worried about them. I think that they respect them. I think that they know that what the Indianapolis Colts are capable of doing, and Frank Wright and that team, because he's going to definitely have them prepared. But I just think if the Tennessee Titans go out and do their job and play how they played in the last two quarters, I think they're going to be okay, but it's going to be a hard-fought battle.
Chris Sanders is our guest. What did you make of Julio Jones' performance on Sunday against the Seahawks?
I'm very happy. I mean, we've been waiting to see that. You know, we played against the Arizona Cardinals. He struggled a little bit with catching the ball. But watching him play and watching him run, and when he ran that first post route, he's got a little bit of acceleration left, because I'm like, okay, he's not as fast, because we didn't really get a chance to see him in practice. But watching him run that post and locate the football, he's still got it. I mean, he's got some juice in the tank. He's capable of making a big catch. We saw that one where he caught in the back of the end zone, but they said he didn't get his feet in. But just showing you that he's primed to have a big season. If he stays healthy, it's just going to make everybody around him better, A.J. Brown and all those guys that's in that sporting cast.
Okay, A.J. Brown dropped the ball like three or four times. What did you make of that?
He's going to be all right. I mean, it happens. I mean, if this happened like four or five games in a row, then now you got to do something. But it's been one game. I mean, I know last year, the year before, he dropped a big touchdown pass against who? The Indianapolis Colts. But one thing he has to do as a guy that he is, start on Monday. You know, catch the jugs on Monday. You know, catch the little short passes that you missed in the game, and just focus on not what you made a mistake in, but correct the mistake. And I think he's going to be fine. We're going to see him catch maybe one or two touchdowns, and we'll basically forget it. But he's just going to go do his job like A.J. Brown does.
Chris Sanders is our guest. What did you think of the defense against Seattle? I know they gave up some busted coverages, and you never want to see that.
Right.
But I think we were worried that, you know, mano-a-mano that Seattle right. with Russell and the receivers, and I thought Fulton was fantastic against DK
Absolutely.
Metcalf, and they did not let those receivers take over the game other than, like, the bad personnel situations they found themselves in. What did you think of the defense?
Yeah, those are correctable. I mean, I know the secondary, you know, busted the coverage on the 68-yard one and also against Lockett when they're supposed to play, you know, bracket coverage. But here's the thing. I love the way they responded. And I think they responded well, even though they gave up a couple of big plays to, you know, Lockett and the running back, Wim Swan. So I can't remember his name.
Swain.
They gave up, yeah, Swain. But they gave it up to him. But they settled down and they played football. They took DK Metcalf out to play. And they, after, you know, Lockett caught those couple of passes, they took him out. But also, I loved it. What they did is they took away the run game. When you take away the run game, because the Seattle Seahawks run game is really not that great with Chris Carson, they took away that, so all they had to do was pass. And once they relied on something that they're usually doing, and the Tennessee Titans took it away, they looked like a team that was basically in disarray because we were putting pressure on Russell Wilson.
Do you feel Autry and Dupree out there?
Oh, I can feel. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can feel those guys. I mean, they were playing big. I mean, if you look at the game, you know, in the end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, look at Russell Wilson's eyes. Russell Wilson's eyes were like, whoa, these big dogs are coming, because he consistently felt pressure. I mean, as you're a quarterback, you consistently feel pressure. It's hard for you to see downfield. It's hard for you to see that second and third and fourth wide receiver because you're consistently feeling pressure. Look at the play where they should have called a safety and they didn't. Look at his body language. When he took a three-step drop and somebody's in his mugshot and then he tried to spin and there's another defender there, you can't play quarterback like that. So I'm proud of those guys. You felt them on the field. They played big. And if that duo keeps getting nasty and hitting quarterbacks in the lips, let's go get this thing, baby.
Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, as always, joining us on the program. Chris, we will see you Sunday before the Titans and the Colts get set. They are, by the way, are honoring the Oilers this weekend. They're putting Bum Phillips into the Ring of Honor, as he should have been years and years and years ago. But they are honoring the Oilers. They can't wear the throwback uniforms yet because they can't change the helmets. But do you still have your Houston Oiler gear?
Absolutely. I got the pants, the socks, and everything, the helmet and everything, man. I might wear my jersey to our pregame thing.
That's because he wants everyone to know that he actually played in the NFL. Chris Sanders, as always, appreciate it. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Appreciate you, Doc. You take care of my friend.
Yep, right. Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, joining us on the program, as always. Something Chris hit on about the Colts. I want to get to that next, because I'm not sure I feel the same way, and I know I may regret it, but we'll get to that coming up next. Hey, do not miss the pregame show. Chris, Mark Howard, and I live from Rock Bottom Brewery downtown on Sunday. We will be breaking it down from 9:30 to 11:30 prior to the Titans and the Colts. The pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Stillman & Company, we're live from First Horizon Park tonight. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.